Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Karen Reed back in court again today, and we're going to take you right there for all of the coverage of what's going on in that courtroom and the follow-ups with Judge Beverly Cannone. Let's go there right now.
You may have said something that you don't have a factual foundation for. I think I have done my best to disabuse the court of that we were drawing from reasonable inferences. I wonder if the Commonwealth is going to get the same treatment for saying that Trooper Proctor was standing feet away from the defendant's vehicle and never touched the right rear taillight. That's a very bold statement for the Commonwealth to make, and it's also completely untrue. It's not supported by a single fact. It's not supported by a fact or evidence before the court. The problem with this unsupported motion, because it's unsupported and it's and the declaration is signed by three different individuals, you can just sort of say whatever you want in the motion. And I guess get away with it. The video speaks for itself, Your Honor. It shows Michael Proctor walk behind the car directly to the position of the passenger taillight. He positions himself right on the other side of the camera view, not feet away. And it certainly does not show, and there's no evidence before the court, that he, quote, never touched it. As a matter of fact, we would submit.
Does it show that he does touch it?
Well, of course it doesn't show he touches it, Your Honor. It's he's on the other side of the car. That's not the point. The point is, a reasonable inference is, he could have touched it. He was standing right there. Nobody forced him. Nobody was holding a gun to his head. He walked around the other side of the car and obviously was standing there for a reason. By himself, in a corner, out of the view of a camera, and then when the Commonwealth plays the video, it switched, and the intimation to the triers of fact was he never approached the right rear taillight, that passenger taillight. And all of that
and
was
you cleared that up.
Right. But that is the galling part of this entire thing. The court has asked me a couple of times, and I'm going to get to it a little bit more in detail, what the prejudice is. If that's not prejudice, I don't know what is. It's literally propounding false information to a trier of fact. That is not a small thing. Even after the trial was over, it was concluded, and the mistrial was declared, we're still getting videos that we can't get a straight answer about their source. Where did these videos come from in October? That surveillance feed is on a 30-day deletion loop. That's what we've been told. I said a few minutes ago this morning, I said the Commonwealth may not have known that it was on a 30-day loop. What I meant was actually the prosecutor sitting in this courtroom. The three, my brothers and sister, may not have known about that 30-day override. I don't know. I don't know what they knew or didn't know. I'm certainly not going to cast aspersions and put that on them. But someone from the Commonwealth darn sure knew that that was on a 30-day loop or a 30-day override. So who's had those for all this time? How were they stored? Why wasn't that information revealed to our expert when we went all the way to Canton to try to download that DVR? Where's the original? Where are the copies? These are questions for which we need some facts. And the fact that those have been withheld from us is exactly the kind of bad act and bad faith that demands that the court presume prejudice in the case. A few minutes ago, the court asked me before lunch, what is the prejudice? There's plenty of actual prejudice, but I'll get to that in just a second when I speak a little bit about the law at the end of my comments. We don't need to prove actual prejudice because the law presumes prejudice against Ms. Reed because of the bad conduct on behalf of the Commonwealth. And yet again, when it comes to this same issue, the Commonwealth recites this now worn-out sentence, the prosecutor was unaware of the existence of these videos, end quote. How many times are they going to try to excuse away a blatant discovery and or Brady violation with the sentence that the prosecutor was unaware? It just doesn't matter. And that brings us to the October 10 videos that we got in 2024. The Commonwealth claims that they received these videos on or about August 21st, 2024. They sort of vaguely claim that these videos were provided along with a letter, quote-unquote, letter from Canton Police Chief, end quote. There's no report, there's no email, there's no communications, there's no text message, nothing other than this, quote, letter. And it actually wasn't a letter. It was more of an informal note written on a personal pad, a Canton PD pad by the chief. There's no chain of custody log authenticating the videos, no authentication documents whatsoever, no foundational documents, no indication of where the videos came from or how she came to possess them at the time. But she did write on that little pad, quote, that is how it records, LOL, no tampering, end quote. LOL, laugh out loud. So the chief of police is laughing in the face of serious Brady violations, in the face of serious evidentiary violations and discovery violations.
And what was the date? 10-10-24 you received that? Was that the date?
10-10-24. That's correct. By the way, the Commonwealth claimed in its opposition papers that, quote, the prosecutor requested that both Massachusetts State Police and Canton Police Department produce all relevant and material surveillance video, end quote. And that was sometime unidentified between April 17th, 2024 and April 24th, 2024. I laud them for that. Good. I'm glad they demanded finally, in the middle of trial, quote, all relevant and material surveillance video. So why didn't we get this from Canton PD until October 2024, well after trial? What was the delay? And why did we get another video in January of 2025? What was the delay? How could this be seen as anything other than intentional? We know now that Sergeant Buchanan, we know that Proctor, we know that Chief Rafferty, and now through another report, we know that this officer, DG Impetro, all had access to and knew about the videos. And then we have, on top of that, in the middle of trial, I think it was Mr. Lally, it may have been Ms. McLaughlin, someone said, it's unclear from the opposition, that all relevant and material surveillance video be turned over immediately, and it still wasn't done. That is an intentional withholding of evidence. And then we get these new reports. What's probably most troubling is what's in the reports that we got on Friday, this past Friday. additional reports from the Commonwealth and a report from Sergeant D. Jim Petro. He reveals the following. He writes this report on the 27th, which was last Thursday, and then we got the report on the 28th. He says that in February of 2022, and I'm paraphrasing, in February of 2022, Proctor requested Sallyport video of SUV inside Sallyport. Apparently that was provided. I mean, we have to presume from his report when he says Proctor requested in February of 2022 Sallyport video of the SUV exterior footage that he downloaded it from somewhere and gave it to him. Assuming it was February of 2022, that would have been before the overwrite, I presume. Because I think the math in my head is it's 28 days in February. If it's in February at all, it's within the 30 days from January 29th. So it has to have been. Then he writes that in June of 2023, Proctor requested Sallyport video again of the SUV exterior footage. Quote, this is from his report, I believe this may also have been the approximate time that I downloaded video recordings that covered the entire time frame that the suspect's vehicle was held at the Canton police station, end quote. He goes on to say, quote, due to the large size of the files at that time, I had to break it down into six-hour blocks for ease of exporting. This is the first we're hearing of any of this last Thursday. How is that? Sure. Ms. Little just handed me a clean copy of the DGM Petro report. I would like to have this marked and appended to our motion to dismiss, if it's okay.
Sure. Did I get that attached to your motion to change the scheduling?
Yes.
You probably did.
So I've seen it.
Okay.
May I approach? But,
hold on. What, Ms. Little?
We'd still like to make it part of the record, if
sure.
That's all right, Your Honor.
Sure. I just wanted to know whether I needed a copy, because I have a copy. I've seen it.
May I approach?
Yes.
Thank
you. So are we marking it?
Yeah,
so we need it if we're marking it.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake.
Exhibit one still marked?
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honor. The question is, how in June of 2023, now I'm going to go a little bit slow here just because it's linear. The argument is linear. In June of 2023, according to DGM Petro, he downloaded every single bit of video of that car while in the Sallyport or while at Canton PD in Sallyport. How is that possible? How could that be? As of February 28th, or maybe March 1st, those videos are gone. So how could he have access to the whole thing? It's because someone at the Commonwealth downloaded the whole thing. They saved it. Or the only other explanation is that DVR was not, at the time, on a 30-day override. It's the only two explanations. Again, this is binary. So in April of 2024, as the court knows, we got additional video, and that's the inverted video. In the spring of 2024, while trial was being held, DGM Petro, quote, it says, quote, I downloaded some video recordings that you and I believed may be needed to refute claims being made by the defense. The you and I is him to Chief Rafferty. That's who this report is to. And it includes footage of Higgins. So now we find out, for the first time, that Chief Rafferty and this sergeant had been talking and strategizing about how to defeat some defense arguments, presumably, by use of videos that had never been turned over. And the Commonwealth uses a phrase in its moving papers, I believe in this motion, about ambush. That is the definition of an ambush. So DiGiampietro admits that he, Rafferty, and this, the Canton Police Department had Sally Port video that was material to the case. Remember, his quote was that you and I believed may be needed to refute claims made by the defense. They were strategizing about how to defeat certain of our arguments, and they didn't turn it over. Specifically, he downloaded video and presumably gave it to Chief Rafferty. But then the interesting thing is Chief Rafferty held on to it. She never turned it over. Probably because they didn't help the prosecution. They showed Higgins engaged in conduct that is, at the very least, highly suspicious and clearly exculpatory because it impeaches his other testimony. It shows him on the phone when he testified that he didn't make calls in the middle of the night. There's no question that with this example, that is an intentional withholding of evidence. That is the legal definition of bad faith, and it's unconscionable to do that. Now put in context what we eventually did receive during the trial and then after. We received the inverted video that was falsely presented as the right rear passenger side of the vehicle, or the passenger rear side of the vehicle. Number two, we received several videos of Brian Higgins at Canton Police Department, clearly using his phone at approximately 1:35 or so a.m. And we received exterior footage that would ordinarily show the condition of the passenger taillight, which all happens to be corrupted, like every other video of the rear passenger side of that SUV. This is stunning. It's not like the Canton Police Department and the Massachusetts State Police were sort of blissfully incompetent or blissfully ignorant and unaware of the existence of these exculpatory videos. It's quite the opposite. Multiple officers, Proctor, Rafferty, Buchnick, O'Rourke, DiGiampietro, these individuals, we believe, O'Rourke may not have known, but we know that the others did, and have now basically admitted it or been caught trying to hide it. They were all variously actively engaged with these videos. They were searched for, they were discussed, they downloaded them, they saved them, they copied them, they labeled them, they transported them, they reviewed them, and they strategized about them. These videos were top of mind for all of these folks. We know there were hours and hours and hours of footage that was so large it had to be broken down into 6-hour blocks. All of that was pulled. And none of this footage was disclosed to the defense before April of 2024. And most of the files that have been turned over so far have been turned over after the trial was over. We had no idea this footage existed, and to this day it continues to be, the bulk of it continues to be withheld from the defense. And then we move to Sergeant Buchnick's actual report. As I indicated, he wrote a report last Friday as well, dated the 28th. Quote, in furtherance of the John O'Keefe Canton homicide investigation, sometime in early spring of 2022, I was made aware that a request had been made by Trooper Proctor and then fulfilled by Canton PD for surveillance video as it related to the arrival and storage of the Lexus SUV belonging to Karen Reed. This was the spring of 2022, he knew. At Trooper Proctor's request, I proceeded to Canton Police and picked up the digital media storage containing said video and transported it to the Canton Norfolk District Attorney's Office and turned it over to Trooper Proctor. I did not review this video at this time.
What date did he do that? The same date?
He says at this time, but it's the sometime early spring of 2022. That's the best he can do in his report. Paragraph 2. In July of 2023, so this is a little more defined, I was once again made aware by Trooper Proctor that a request had been made to Canton PD for additional video and that it was ready to be picked up. Since the Canton Police Department is conveniently located on my route of travel to work, I stopped by and picked up the CD from the front desk of the police department, which was labeled Trooper Buchanick, with a yellow post-it note. I further added Canton PD 12922, and then the case number, which is, or their case number, 2022-112-33, to more accurately identify the item and transported it to our office, subsequently turning it over to Trooper Proctor. So there's a second CD, now in July of 2023. I did not review that video at that time. See the attached copy of the post-it note. Final paragraph. In my preparation for trial in May of 2024, I was provided with a thumb drive and the CD labeled with a post-it note on my desk. What's interesting is that the CD with the post-it note on his desk may or may not have been the same CD that he transported in July of 23, because they seem to be labeled a little differently.
So I haven't seen this report. Does he say from whom he received that?
I'll finish reading it, but I don't believe he does. No. No, it's pretty vague. It's passive voice, and it's pretty vague. I was provided a thumb drive and a CD labeled with a post-it on my desk to review prior to testimony. So it does not say. At this time, I reviewed video made available to me, which included video footage of the Canton PD exterior Sallyport. Exterior Sallyport. This video was labeled with a post-it note on a CD, and it contained a video of the interior of the Sallyport, which was grainy and had a camera vantage point from the front of the Sallyport. I also reviewed the Canton PD driveway footage. In review, I also viewed video of the back wall Sallyport camera vantage point. I had not seen this video prior to my May date review. I later learned that this video was provided in an inverted manner. After I reviewed all the provided video, the thumb drive, and the CD were returned. It doesn't say to whom they were returned. Your Honor, if I could mark this report as well.
Sure. Do you have an extra copy for me?
I do. I do. It does have one highlight on it. May I show it to Mr. Brennan?
Yes.
Are they two still marked?
So you do have an extra copy, Ms. Little?
I do not have an extra copy, Your Honor.
I thought Mr. Jackson just said he had an extra.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mr. Jackson, do you have an extra copy?
I think I might.
I've got it right here.
You have an extra copy? Is that one clean?
Not clean, but...
Let me see. No, that was the only copy that I've got.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Please. This one has highlights on it. I apologize.
It's okay. Thank you. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. The court asked probably the most important question about this report, which is, who was it that supplied the video or the thumb drives or the CDs to Sergeant Buchanick? Who's at the center of all these Sallyport videos? Who does he say was requesting the Sallyport videos that he was acting as the courier for in other particulars? Every one of those answers is Michael Proctor. So who do we believe most reasonably would have supplied the information to Sergeant Buchanick to review? It stands to reason it could have been Trooper Proctor. Seems to be reasonable. But I don't know, because Trooper Buchanick doesn't say. But that would be another question that would be open to answer if we had an evidentiary hearing. Michael Proctor was receiving the footage directly from DG Impetro, dating all the way back to February of 2022. He was the one receiving the footage directly from Buchanick, dating all the way back to the spring of 2022. Michael Proctor was receiving footage from both sources multiple times through the years. Proctor was the one who clearly had possession, custody, and control over the exculpatory footage. It was his, every bit of it. And now let's recall what he said at trial when asked about all this footage, because he was confronted about footage. And keep in mind, Your Honor, when I'm asking these questions, I know none of this. None of it. Michael Proctor lied during his testimony, but he knew that we couldn't impeach him. There was no way I could impeach him. I didn't have any of these videos to impeach him with, because we didn't have any of the evidence that had been secured concerning that Sallyport. Question. Their surveillance video from Canton Police Department's Sallyport garage that wasn't turned over, right? Answer. That video was discovered later on and then handed over. That video was discovered later on.
So where in the transcript is that?
I can get you the page and line number, Your Honor.
My guess is Ms. Little can get it pretty quickly.
I'm guessing she can.
I'll get to you in just a moment, Your Honor.
June 10th?
It was either June 10th or June 12th, but let me double check.
Well, she's looking for that, Your Honor. May I proceed?
Please go ahead, yep.
Okay. The only thing it's important to remember from a date standpoint, we'll get the date that he actually testified to this, but from a date standpoint, the only thing that had been handed over at the time that he testified to that was a single video with 42 minutes missing and a flatbed and the flatbed driveway footage outside the Sallyport that doesn't show much of anything. It's now been proven that testimony, that video was discovered later on and then handed over, suggesting there was either only one video or all of it was discovered later and turned over. Both of the clauses in that sentence are a lie. The video wasn't discovered later. It was discovered in February, at the latest, February of 2022, just days after this incident. He asked for it and he received it, according to Sergeant DGM Petro. And it wasn't turned over either. None of it. But at trial, we didn't have the truth. I couldn't impeach him with this. He made sure that all the footage was delivered directly to him, starting days after this incident. And he controlled it, he hid it, and then he lied about it. That is the definition of bad faith. That is the definition of withholding exculpatory evidence. That is the definition of suppressing Brady evidence. There is no other way to define this. He fooled us, and it's egregious. Is it possible, with all this sort of years-long flurry that we've just talked about surrounding the Sallyport videos, that the actual trial prosecutors were completely unaware of their existence until Proctor testified before the federal grand jury? Is that possible? I suppose it is. I want to give the prosecutors the benefit of the doubt. I do. Is it reasonable? That's another question, to believe that they just knew nothing about this. We know Proctor lied to us. Could he have lied to them? I suppose. But as the law mandates, Your Honor, it just doesn't matter. In the eyes of the law, Proctor is the prosecution, and the prosecution is Michael Proctor. And then we move to January 28th, 2025, this year. We're still getting additional videos at that time. This new camera angle, which is blurry and grainy and wobbly, it does, however, show the passenger side rear taillight as it's driven into the Sallyport garage. The footage is so grainy and so blurry, however, it's so corrupted that, once again, the true condition of that taillight is completely obscure. At a certain point, it begins to defy logic. And the reason I wanted to talk about each one of these videos in turn is because it absolutely defies logic that all of this footage magically cuts out, blurs out, becomes grainy, becomes obscured at the precise time that the SUV is pulled in to the Sallyport. The question then becomes, what's been happening to these videos that have been in Michael Proctor's possession since that time, for the last 2.5-3 years? And again, I've lost count how many times the Commonwealth makes the claim, quote, prosecutors had never seen this video, end quote. The entirety of the Commonwealth's defense on this issue is the indefensible, which is, it just wasn't me. Okay, fine, it may not have been you, but it was the Commonwealth, in quotation marks, capital. The Commonwealth then claims that, quote, after directing a review of all physical evidence and data files, this video was located within a paper case file of the investigators, end quote. I believe that Mr. Brennan, when he came on the case, he's the one who directed a review of all physical evidence and data files. I would have to guess. Again, I would applaud that. Should have happened years ago. What's most curious about this video, however, is that the prosecution now admits, quote, after inquiry it was learned that an investigator obtained this video from Canton Police Department in 2022, and it was placed in a physical case file, end quote. That's a direct quote from their opposition. They don't name who the investigator is. They don't indicate whose case file it was. They don't tell us where that case file had been, who had control over that case file, just a paper case file somewhere, mysteriously. Whether it was CPD or MSP, we don't know. Which investigator, we still don't know. What can we learn from this admission by the Commonwealth? That investigators did, in fact, download the Canton PD videos in 2022 before they were overwritten. That's the only way these videos could exist. We've talked about that. And what we don't know is where the rest of them went and why we don't have them and why we didn't have them for the first trial. The Commonwealth basically concedes that it is in direct violation of its discovery obligations not to have turned over these videos that were in their possession. But it makes the claim that it doesn't matter because, quote, the poor quality of the video makes it difficult for either party to benefit from the video, end quote. In its opposition, it sounds like more of a desperate argument than anything else that these cumulative, that these egregious errors don't justify the court taking any action because they claim, quote, there's no evidence of bad faith. I would take issue with that. But the quote goes on, there's no evidence of bad faith on behalf of the Commonwealth, nor any of its agents, particularly where the Commonwealth is equally aggrieved by the poor video quality and inability to obtain a forensically extracted copy of the surveillance video. Equally aggrieved. First, in that sentence, the Commonwealth admits that the defense is aggrieved. They say they're equally aggrieved, however. Aggrieved means wronged or unfairly treated or suffered harm or injustice. Merriam-Webster defines aggrieved as suffering from an infringement or a denial of legal rights. You bet we're aggrieved. But the Commonwealth can't claim that they're aggrieved when they're the ones doing the aggrieving. It doesn't work that way. The Commonwealth concedes that there's irreparable harm. They acknowledge that the forensic videos were destroyed, or at least they claim now that they're destroyed. We can never obtain the information necessary to establish the validity of any of these videos or whether and by whom they may have been manipulated, if at all. The Commonwealth can't shift the blame because the videos have literally been in their possession the entire time. It was their actions and the actions of their agents that caused this irremediable harm. Your Honor, this is, as I said, this is the definition of bad faith, and this goes back to the court's original question this morning, which is, can you describe the prejudice that Ms. Reed has suffered? And I think we've done a pretty good job of describing that throughout this argument, but the definition of bad faith means we don't have to prove actual prejudice. Prejudice is presumed under the law. If we're to believe the declarations that were submitted by ADA Lally and ADA McLaughlin and ADA Brennan, then at the very least, there is no other conclusion but that Michael Proctor and other investigators intentionally secured these videos, they withheld the evidence from us, and they withheld the evidence from the prosecution team. Let's take them at their word. Even after being explicitly instructed to turn over that evidence, that is bad faith. And how many times do they have to say, we didn't know about this, it just doesn't matter. Let's take them at their word. It doesn't absolve the Commonwealth of its obligations, and it doesn't reduce the prejudice that the defense has suffered. This was a pattern engaged in by the Massachusetts State Police, by the Canton Police Department, over and over and over again. And now we know, through this new revelation, that it was intentional. The prejudice the defense has suffered is legally presumed, and it's also factually proven. And thus, the only remedy is dismissal. When is dismissal warranted? And this is, I'd like to talk for just a couple of seconds about the legal standards. Where there is misconduct that's so egregious, deliberate, and intentional, prejudice is to be presumed. That means that the defense is not required to show Ms. Reed suffered any actual prejudice because dismissal is necessary to prevent the repetition of this type of misconduct. And that comes to us directly from Bridgman versus District Attorney for Suffolk District at 476 Mass. 298. It's a 2017 case. Even if the court does not, and this is secondary to that, even if the court does not presume the prejudice and finds that these myriad violations were somehow inadvertent or a mistake, the result of some accident or negligence, this case still has to be dismissed under the second scenario and the second prong because Ms. Reed has suffered actual prejudice by the Commonwealth's violations. We could not cross-examine these witnesses the way they should have been cross-examined at the first trial. The repeated and flagrant discovery violations were not an accident. I think we've established that at this point. They weren't a mistake. There were too many people looking at them, strategizing about them, to then say, I didn't realize their import. They were designed specifically, the fact that we weren't provided the evidence was designed specifically to obtain a strategic advantage over the defense and to get a conviction at all costs rather than to pursue the truth. There are obviously additional Brady violations and prejudices that Ms. Reed has suffered. I've detailed those in our moving papers. And I want to incorporate all of those arguments by reference here as well. But relating to the surveillance footage itself, there's no question that the Commonwealth intentionally withheld it, and they've been withholding it since January 29th, 2022. The Commonwealth can't really seriously claim, Your Honor, that four or five or however many different law enforcement officers were aware of and withheld the surveillance video or the surveillance footage, and who were supposedly specifically instructed by Adam Lally or his team back in April of 2024 to turn everything over, and it was just inadvertently withheld. This was intentional. And the Commonwealth then compounded those violations by Michael Proctor lying on the stand about his knowledge of the video footage and his turning it over to the defense. It was literally a fraud on the jury. And now, well after trial, the Commonwealth has been forced to admit that even more exculpatory evidence or surveillance evidence from January 2022 is in their possession. And it was also entirely withheld from the defense throughout this litigation and throughout their first trial. In addition to the presumptive prejudice, Your Honor, there has been actual prejudice. This was, some would say, a close case when it ended. The court recalls that. The jury was hung on some charge or charges, and the evidence suggests that they voted in her favor on others. The court needs to ask itself, what would the jury have done had they had all the evidence to which they were entitled, to which we were entitled? But they didn't. Every one of these videos was in some way compromised, even the videos that we did have. And the compromise always conveniently obscured the truth and obscured Ms. Reed's rights. This is an exculpatory fact that we should have been able to explore during the past 3 years, and certainly we should have been able to explore it at trial, but we did not have the videos. The Commonwealth did, though. And it's the cumulative effect of all these gross and repeated violations that undermines the Commonwealth's argument that this is just about a broken camera. It couldn't be further from the truth. We're to believe that all these cameras just spontaneously became defective at the exact same time. Like I said before, it defies logic. For the Commonwealth to have all this footage for a solid 3 years and hold it back from us the entire time, it makes one question what was going on with that evidence. And I have to say, in terms of lesser remedies, Your Honor, what's interesting is that the exclusion, you know, obviously the exclusionary rule exists.
I understand that that does not help the defense.
It doesn't help the defense. And I appreciate the court finishing my thought on that. It's the opposite. The only remedy that can prevent this kind of repetition, this kind of misconduct, is dismissal. That's the only remedy available. And that's what law, the law, and that's what justice demands. As a final thought, if the court, even in the face of all this overwhelming evidence of gross misconduct, declines to dismiss this case at this time, we would urge the court to grant us an evidentiary hearing so that we can make an actual factual record of the myriad of issues brought up here. This will give the court a much better understanding of the facts supporting dismissal, and it'll perfect the record on these critical constitutional issues. And with that, I'll submit.
Okay, so thank you. I have a question for you, so go back to the podium, please, because you may need your notes. But Ms. Little, did you find the Proctor testimony?
I did, Your Honor. It's June 12th, 2025, the reporter's transcript at 1-148. And that's from the copy of transcripts with sidebars, okay, just for the court's reference, lines 8 through 12.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, I have a question, Mr. Jackson, just about, so you argued, obviously, the importance of the Lexus arriving at the Canton Police Department. You argued a distinction between a cracked taillight versus a shattered taillight.
Correct.
In your pleadings, and again, you just saw, I want specifics where I can find something. On page 28, you talked at the top line, cracked, not shattered, when it arrived at the conflicted CPD on January 29, 2022. If the taillight was largely intact and only cracked, rather than shattered and missing 47 pieces, as Dighton Police Officer Sergeant Barrows testified he observed earlier that day, after the Commonwealth claim Ms. Reed had struck Mr. O'Keefe, the evidence would establish Ms. Reed's innocence and be case-ending for the Commonwealth. The 47 pieces I'm having trouble finding. I just took a quick review of Sergeant Barrows' testimony yesterday upon being prepared for this. I didn't see it in there. Ms. Little, do you know where that 47 pieces is?
Yeah, the 47 pieces is not related to Sergeant Barrows' testimony.
Well, it sounds it from this, so I'm not to read it this way.
What Sergeant Barrows clearly testified to was that he observed a taillight that was cracked and not broken.
Okay, the 47 pieces, I read that to mean it was from Barrows' testimony.
No.
As Dighton Police, Barrows testified. All right, where do I find that 47 pieces?
The 47 pieces, I can get a multiple transcript sites, but those were the photographs the Commonwealth presented at trial, that there were that many pieces found at the crime scene.
It's the number of pieces that were booked into evidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, if you have trial transcript of that, I don't need 47 points, but if there's something that summarizes it. Because I took that to read as I see it reading.
No, Sergeant Barrows specifically testified about his observations of the taillight earlier that day.
Right.
It was uncontroverted that there were 47 pieces of taillight recovered at
the scene. That's not clear to me the way this is written, so I'm glad I asked you.
Okay.
All right, so with that, now, Ms. Tinetti, I'm not going to hear from you now about the court officers not being in charge of the jury. I'm going to hear from Mr. Brennan, and then we'll get to you, and hopefully we'll have time. But, Mr. Brennan, I have a question for you. As I started with a question for the defense, so I'd like you to explain to the court, please, what efforts the Commonwealth made to comply with the Rule 14 obligation regarding the Sallyport videos, and why the dribs and drabs of the way the discovery came in.
It may be most helpful if I give the court a history as I've learned it about the production of video in this case.
Okay.
And it will explain in context the production of video and will help create the foundation so the court can understand and perhaps the defense can best understand.
All right, and just like I did with Mr. Jackson, if I need to, I'm going to interrupt you to clarify some of this. So know that that's what I'm focused on.
I understand clearly. In November of 2024, the defense asked me to see if I could provide a chain of custody regarding the production of video in this case. And so I agreed that I would do that and made best efforts to talk to as many witnesses as I could, review the discovery, and speak to the attorneys. Now, When I started sometime in late September, I had found the letter from Chief Rafferty with the production of video in August. The letter or note was dated in August. So to start from the beginning, the prosecutors in this case did not have knowledge that there was videos from the Sallyport area. There was nothing about it that was particularly relevant to them. The defense theory did not make it clear to them that that was important. There was no motion filed by the defense.
At what point in time?
This is leading up to trial.
Okay.
At that point, there had been no request by the defense for video of the Sallyport area. What I learned is that Trooper Proctor had requested Sallyport video from the Canton Police Department. And the person who was the custodian of Canton Police video, who would download it from the DVR, was Sergeant DGM Petro. He made a request shortly after this event on January 29th, 2022. Sergeant DGM Petro downloaded video from the front wall camera, which was later characterized as the blurry camera, and he left it at the front desk. Trooper Buchanick, at the direction of Trooper Proctor, picked up the video and he brought it to Trooper Proctor. Trooper Buchanick did not look at the video at that time. It was given to Trooper Proctor. Trooper Proctor did not provide it to the prosecutors. So Trooper Proctor was aware of the video. The prosecutors were not aware of the video. That video is the same video that Sergeant DGM Petro says that he downloaded the video in 6-hour segments, and that contained the front wall, blurry camera inside the Sallyport, and camera in front of the police station. That remained with Trooper Proctor for some time. In June, around June of 2023, Trooper Proctor then made a second request from Sergeant DGM Petro.
Even though he already had it?
For different cameras. He wanted cameras, a camera angle of outside the Sallyport area. So when the tow truck dropped the car off, leading into the Sallyport, which is now characterized as the exterior Sallyport video. Again, Trooper Proctor asked Trooper Buchanick to go to the Canton Police Department and pick up a copy of the downloaded video. Trooper Buchanick went to the police department, picked up the CD at the front desk. That CD had a yellow sticky tab on it with Trooper Buchanick's name, and Trooper Buchanick wrote in the case file on that yellow sticky. He brought the CD to Trooper Proctor. Again, Trooper Proctor in June 2023 had a copy of the exterior Sallyport video, but did not provide it to the prosecutors. Both of those videos remained dormant. When Trooper Proctor was called to the federal grand jury, essentially, he testified or was asked about video and said that he reviewed video. Now, this was not evidence that the Commonwealth intended on introducing or had any specific interest in. There was no particular discovery request by the defense, and there was no order. But upon reading that grand jury testimony, ADA Lally reports that he then inquired about the video.
This inquired of whom?
Trooper Proctor.
Okay.
This is shortly before trial. ADA Lally was given a copy of one of two of those productions. He was given the copy of the front wall video, which also contained video of outside the front of the police station. And that was quickly turned over after Attorney Lally received it on April 4th, 2022. So what we know at this point is Trooper Proctor has this original production on April 4th, 2022, shortly after it was provided April 4th, 2022.
2022 or later?
No.
It was later, right?
It was
because
later.
The
it
federal
was,
grand jury was later.
He provided it on the eve of trial. So it was April 4th, 2024. So we know this production on April 4, 2024 was in the hands of Trooper Proctor in shortly after January 29th, 2022. At this point, the prosecution team is still unaware of the June 23 production, which has Trooper Buchanek's name on it, which shows the exterior Sallyport. As trial began, there still was no specific order or request. The chief of police saw something about the trial, and let me rephrase. Prior to the trial, it's reported that Attorney Iannetti was discontent because the video of the front camera Sallyport was so grainy, intermittent, and not continuous. And that's an accurate description of that video. Chief Rafferty, in response to seeing Attorney Iannetti's concerns, then asked Sergeant D. Giampietro to see if there was another camera or to produce any other video from the Sallyport. Sergeant D. Giampietro then downloaded video from the DVR, which is the second camera that is inside the Sallyport, known as the inverted camera, or now characterized as the inverted camera. That was produced April 23rd, 2024, given to ADA Lally, given to the defense. And so at that point, there are three video productions that exist. The first turned over to the defense April 4th, 2024, the second April 23rd, 2024, and the June 23 production of the exterior Sallyport has still not been turned over. It's in the possession of Trooper Proctor, and the prosecutors do not know about it. After the trial, one of the employees from Norfolk County, Colleen Crawford, went to the Sallyport and looked at the DVR system. And when she looked at it, she saw that video still existed on that system. Although there was a 30-day overwrite on that system, the system had a number of backup hard drives, and because of the backup hard drives, the video existed longer than 30 days. She wrote an extensive report that was turned over to the defense, and this is after trial. The report notes her investigation about all the different videos, and it summarizes everything that she saw in that July 2024 visit. As I mentioned earlier, in August, Chief Rafferty provided video of the hallways that included some video of Brian Higgins, and she accompanied a letter or a note. I learned that that video was copied during the trial, and it is noted in the sergeant's letter. The chief of police and the sergeant were downloading video, not in response to a motion to compel or produce, but rather because they had concerns about accusations that were being made about the department, and they were saving video, in their opinion or from their perspective, to help defend against future false claims against them. They downloaded a number of videos that were then turned over in that August 2024 production. When I first learned of that August letter and note, I turned it over to the defense immediately. The issue came up regarding the DVR in November, and as we've litigated extensively, so I'll simply summarize it, I invited the defense to come to the Canton Police Department. Given the intermittent or spotty production of video, I thought it best they have an opportunity to look firsthand, although I didn't know if the video would exist, as I said. And then when they came in December, I think it was December 12th, if my memory serves, and learned that there was no longer video stored because it had been overwritten, I then went to the Canton Police Department so that I could have a closer look at the video cameras to see if there was something missing. I toured the entire station. I learned about the videos. And then, as a consequence, I spoke to the chief, other officers, and the sergeant unexpectedly. The sergeant told me that he would click and drag copies of video when he would download them from the DVR. Inevitably, we had the litigation about whether the defense was going to download in person or not. And then, as I tried to finalize my investigation into the tapes, and realizing there was no actual written chain of custody, I wanted best to memorialize it. I had been reviewing all files, data, hard files, but I had not been on the case long enough to review everything, so I asked that the parties of the Commonwealth look through all files, all databases, so that I could help facilitate my review. At that point, I was provided by Trooper Tully the June 2023 CD with Trooper Buchanan's name on it. That is the exterior Sallyport video. And within 24 hours, I provided that to the defense. I then asked both the sergeant and Trooper Tully and Trooper Buchanan to write reports. Since there was no chain of custody, I wanted best to give as much information as I could and document the history of the video. That, Your Honor, is a summary of everything that I had learned, the investigation, and the production of the videos.
Do you know which investigator's file it was found in?
Trooper Proctor's. Your Honor, I have three separate arguments. I will proceed with the videotape argument since we've lodged into it.
Sure.
Okay. Now, the defense has made a number of conclusions that there was somehow videotape that was tampered with. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever, none. It's not even speculation. There's no evidence that any videotape was ever tampered with. They say it, but there's none. I have seen none. They have produced absolutely no evidence that any video was altered or tampered. The defense lodges the idea of bad faith, that there was some type of advantage and that this video was withheld from them on purpose. And again, that is a baseless claim. If the government was going to hide video from the defense, they never would have got it. Maybe they would have got something after I came in and looked. They would have not got this production in April 2024. They would not have gotten the production if the government was looking to hide anything. And so the idea of intentionally withholding or bad faith is just characterization by the defense. The words Brady have meaning. Now, first, Brady needs to be exculpatory. And that's going to be something I think I can demonstrate does not fit this case. And secondly, in order to compel the court to conclude there was some type of remedy that should be issued, they want the court to conclude, like they do, that there was some type of tampering or some type of destruction of evidence. There was none. There was none. Now, Trooper Proctor had this video from June 2023 in his file. And I think the best evidence that this was not intentional is if you review Trooper Proctor's trial testimony.
So do you have a volume? Is it at the same place that Ms. Little gave me?
Well, I have the same volume. They gave you a fragment of his testimony, which is about three sentences. But if you actually read a number of pages of his testimony that deals with this video, and it begins on page 133. What you will see, and I won't spend a half hour reading it, but what you will see is that Trooper Proctor was aware of the grainy video, which was the video that was provided right after January 29, 2022. He was unaware of the inverted video until it was produced right before trial or right during trial by the Canton police. And you can also see that he in no way was hiding the June 2023 video, because you can see the confusion between all the parties at trial. Attorney Jackson is asking Trooper Proctor about video, and Trooper Proctor is explaining there is a Sally Port video, and also there's an exterior video outside the Sally Port. And it is clear that Attorney Jackson does not have that June 23 exterior Sally Port video, because he's very confused in the questioning of Trooper Proctor. And Trooper Proctor continually tries to explain that there is both the Sally Port and there's the exterior video. So clearly, Trooper Proctor was aware of the exterior Sally Port video, but it will be clear from the reading of his cross-examination that there was no intentional withholding. He should have, since it was in his possession, whether it was relevant to the government's case or not, he should have provided it to the prosecutor, and then it would have been properly provided. But it was his oversight. There was nothing intentional or advantageous about it, because he struggled to try to explain to Attorney Jackson. And so it's also notable that Attorney Lally never has an opportunity to ask more details about those. Well, he has the opportunity, but he doesn't ask more details about that misunderstanding, because he's wholly unaware that it even exists. It's a confusing moment, but it clarifies that there's nothing intentional whatsoever about this course.
And that is the latest from the courtroom and the hearing of Karen Reed today. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our conversations about this case, the hearings, and more. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.